This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're doing the Christmas setup. So if you haven't seen it and you don't want us to spoil it for you, you might want to pass on this one, and we will see you next time.
Shlemiel, Shlemiel, are you ready
for Wonder Kiss? Diddly dee, we gonna do it.
On your mark, get set, let's go now.
Got a dream for weed or something. We're gonna make our dreams come true. We don't know the lyrics.
Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to Hallmark movies and a little bit to Laverne and Shirley, where we recap one, actually, Lifetime movie this time.
Yes.
We are keeping the Yuletide gay in July, and We are doing the Christmas setup. I am here with the Laverne to my Shirley, Miss Tamara Cosio.
And I am here with the girl who decks my halls, who is the shiny red nose in this production, the pepper to my mint, Corinne Edding.
I am the shiny red nose and the shiny red face.
Speaking of which, one of our social media posts that I put on last season, we'll call this season two, last season, I posted it. I thought it was super cute. It was when we forgot that we had an episode and just did a little interview between the two of us, and I posted a very cute picture of us on Instagram, and Corinne called me shortly after I posted it. It's like, I look like I've bathed in radiation. Is there anything you could do about the ruddiness of my skin? And I was like, what are you talking about? And I looked at it and I'm like, dear God, woman, you're practically purple.
And my natural complexion does run very pink, red, what have you. However, it was not my fault this time. It was the computer's fault.
Yes, it CMYK'd when it should have RGB'd.
Yes.
Something happened in the mix, and Corinne looked like she was sitting on the sun for 20 to 25 minutes.
Yes. Yeah, it was bad. I was like, okay, usually I'm not super picky about how I look, however.
And I was like, God, Corinne, you're so vain. I don't even know. Oh, I see what you mean.
I was like holding up my phone, looking at the picture that I sent and looking at the picture that was there and being like, how? Why? What?
I was really mad at you.
Right? Weed, weed, weed. Fortunately, Tamara was very nice and actually redid the picture so that I did not look like I had like gone to a Cardinals game and decided to paint my face entirely red.
I'm a decent human being.
What team is red? What team is red?
Cardinals. So many to choose from. I'm actually very proud that you pulled that one out of your hat. And only probably because they're Cardinals. Cardinals are red birds. So you see the correlation. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. You know what I started watching recently?
What?
Two things. One is Loot on Apple TV.
Not familiar.
I would say it's the new, what was that other show with Jason Sudeikis that everybody was like, ooh, about?
Oh, the football one?
Yeah.
So it's the new Ted Lasso.
Well, I mean, it's basically like you watch it and you kind of like feel good and you're watching this person sort of have a transformation. Ted Lasso's like everybody kind of transforms around him, and this one, everybody is transforming her that's around her.
Nice.
Yeah, and it's starring Maya Rudolph.
I love Maya Rudolph. I love her so much.
Yeah, no, she is fantastic, and she is a gajillionaire who realizes that her husband has been cheating on her. She divorces him, and then she decides, after pitying herself for a while and, you know, going to Ibiza and all the other places, she decides to work at the foundation that she started. But she doesn't have any idea what the foundation does or anything like that. And she is very misguided in many ways, but she has a good heart. And it's sort of about like the unfolding of all of that. Plus, she's got a very Tamara like, I'm taking my destiny in my own hands moment.
Oh, and then it slips through them and you're like, what the fuck? I don't know if I have Apple TV anymore. As a matter of fact, I was going to cut my Prime Video subscription until I saw that there's a new season of Making the Cut coming out.
Ooh. Oh, and so the second show that I have been watching is The Gordita Chronicles, which is on HBO Max.
Ooh, I do have that.
And it is lovely, and it's a little slow, like, kind of getting started, like, differentiating itself from other, like, kind of sitcom-style shows. But then the writing is really good, and, like, the characters develop all around it, and it's about this middle school-aged girl who, she and her family immigrate from the Dominican Republic, and it's sort of about her negotiating her way through school, but she's gordita, and it's also just about her, and then her family as well, but she's kind of got this indomitable spirit, and she's like, how can I turn this around to my advantage? And she sort of has a very much take no shit attitude, which is beautiful.
Wow. Yeah. For a middle school gordita girl. That's crazy.
Uh-huh.
I myself was a middle school gordita girl. And I was like, I'm just going to go hide in the corner.
You were not gordita.
I'm spraying the phone with my disbelief.
You were thick. You were not gordita.
Yeah. Okay. So I was just gourd.
Gorgeous.
Or maybe dita. Or dita. Isn't that the part that's littler?
Yeah.
Signifies it's smaller.
Ita.
I have to close my window. It's so fucking hot in here. And I want to close my window, but I don't want to be hot. And these goddamn kids behind my place are lighting fireworks and screaming the heavenly bejeebas at each other. It is 9 o'clock.
Well,
go home.
We'll just have it be background noise. It's fine. We don't have a recording studio, and we're doing this for free, so people can people can deal with a little background firework noise.
You've heard Melody pant. You've heard the fireworks. You've heard the kids that are well past curfew that need to go home on ODK After Hours.
Ooh, we bring you all the exciting stuff.
And thankfully for Corinne's editing skills, you do not hear the aftermath of me every time I eat Taco Bell before I record. Thank you, Corinne. Thank you.
You know, doing God's work.
Everybody appreciates that.
So, anything going on in your world other than, baby, you're a firework?
Besides fireworks, unruly children, and me trying to thwart your beautiful face with the fiery red of the sun? No, not much.
Ugh. Well, you brought up me going, yaw, in the last episode, and my face like automatically turned 5 shades darker red. So you're good at that.
Yes, that was your siren song to the single hot fathers out there. Have you had any luck since you've incorporated the moi?
No, not at all. Thanks for asking.
That sucks, because I almost pictured it like a duck call. You know, you just go out into the wild, mwah, mwah, and then all these hot dads would be like, I hear something in the distance. I need to see what that is.
I am suddenly Corinne. Surrounded by all these hot single dads. Yeah. Hey.
And they're baby Bjorns and strollers and taking their kids to their fucking music classes. Oh.
Yeah.
Time has moved on without me. It's about the extent of my dating life up until now. But I don't want to go into details. That's just the gist of it. Current mood.
That sounds like a great mood to be in. I actually have been in that mood. Then I got kicked off of Tinder, which was the least complicated of the dating apps. And now I'm like, dating? What's that? I don't do that.
I think we need to start cataloging our noises. Have a running tally by the end of the season. We can have like a whole dictionary of noises.
Yes.
Phonetically spell it for the listeners.
Including
hard eyes, yeah. Totally. Shall we jump into our, we haven't said anything about our Christmas setup. We're doing a Christmas setup. It's got a adorable gay couple in it. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure that Corinne has a synopsis that'll fill us all in on what the movie's about.
I do happen to have a synopsis. Thank you for that lovely intro. Mm-hmm. Hugo, played by Ben Lewis, is finally heading home to Milwaukee with his bestie Maddie for Christmas after spending last Christmas working. Yay!
Oh, the Laverne and Shirley shit now makes sense. They were in Milwaukee. We're in Milwaukee. Why do I catch on so slowly? I knew it was going to manifest, and here it is. I'm sorry. Continue.
For y'all who are not familiar, in the 70s, Laverne and Shirley was about two single gals in the town. It was a spinoff from Happy Days. It starred Penny Marshall and Cindy Williams, and they were besties, and they lived in Milwaukee, and they worked at a beer factory. Woot woot! Mm-hmm. Living the dream. There were hijinks, just like us. Mm-hmm. And so, since Ben is headed back to Milwaukee, I decided to bring out the Laverne and Shirley for the intro. And if you haven't seen it, you should go to YouTube and look up the opening theme for Laverne and Shirley, because it's fun. Before Hugo leaves, he ultimatums his boss. It's partner or I'm hitting the road. Ben is at a crossroads in his life, but he doesn't really realize it until his life gets flipped, turned upside down when he goes home and his mom, played by Fran Drescher, arranges an encounter with a haughty tree lot guy, Patrick, played by Blake Lee. Will Patrick lure Hugo back to Milwaukee forever? Will Ben get the promotion? Will Fran Drescher's voice give out? Keep those listening ears listening to find out. Yay! Oh, yeah. And do you have any fun facts for us?
Mm-hmm. Do you know any fun facts about this movie? Because I feel like I'm going to blow you away with my first one. I was very, 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 very excited when I first saw it.
I do know some fun facts about this movie.
Damn it. Then you probably know this one. Curses! So, Ben Lewis is the buttoned-up lawyer from New York City. He's very kind of straight-laced, not too outgoing. And Blake Lee plays the entrepreneur who lives in Milwaukee that meets Ben/Hugo, and sparks fly. And there are so many parts in this movie where Blake Lee, literally, I'm like, I fucking think that he is, like, I feel it. The love that he's conveying in his eyes right now, I feel it. It's pulling me in. I like it. I love it. I want some more of it. And then come to find out that the lead actors, Ben Lewis and Blake Lee, are married in real life and have been married since January of 2016.
It's the best ever!
Oh, so good together. So good.
Oh, yeah. He gives love eyes like no other. And I was very excited for this fun fact. So, I was going to be very upset if you didn't mention it.
I'm making a what the fuck face at you right
yes,
now.
Because
why the heck would I? That's like the best fun fact ever.
You know the opposite of hard eyes, gentle listeners? It's what's
dagger
what's,
eyes?
Yes, it's dagger what's coming eyes? At me right now.
Yeah. Daggers. Daggers in my eyes. Okay. And I was like, who else do I want to? Oh, Fran Drescher. I love Fran Drescher.
Yes.
Loved her in The Nanny back in the 90s. Mm-hmm. So Fran Drescher has a very distinctive voice.
She does.
And she is in this movie as the matriarch, Kate Spencer. And ironically, the Christmas-crazed Kate Spencer, because she's all about Christmas all day long, 2 weeks up until Christmas every day. It's ironic because Fran Drescher in real life is Jewish. But she did Christmas so very good. So another fun fact that I found out about Fran Drescher is she has a very distinctive voice.
Yes.
If you're not familiar with Fran Drescher's voice, you really need to look her up, especially in this movie.
Come here, you gotta come in and get some food, you're so skinny!
Kind of with a New York accent. That's a very bad rendition of it. But I only did that because Fran was told early on that her high school teacher said, you're never going to work with that voice. You have to learn how to speak like a normal person. She said, and years later, when I was on The Nanny and they interviewed my parents, they asked my parents if when I was a little kid, did it seem like I had a strange voice? And my mom, in almost the exact same voice as me, said, we never knew she had a crazy voice. And also, I had to look this little tidbit up because in one of the scenes later on in the movie, they go to a gay drag pop-up party.
Uh-huh.
And there is the gosh darn cutest drag queen in the world there named Gladys Claus. And I was so enamored by her performance that I had to look her up and found out that that character was played by Canadian drag artist Lucinda Mew, and they put her in there intentionally because it was a top priority for one of the producers, as he knew this movie is significant to many people in the LGBTQ community who have long been asking for more representation in cable channels' holiday movies, such as Lifetime and Hallmark.
Oh, I love that.
And that is the end of my fun facts.
Yay! Oh my gosh, those fun facts were so freaking, freaking good. I love them.
Thank you.
The more you know.
The more we don't know about this movie, so should we dive right in, Corinne?
Oh yeah, I'm ready.
Let's do it.
It's Christmas time in New York City, and a very nervous Hugo is getting a pep talk over video chat from his bestie, Maddie. He's been angling for a promotion at work. The only thing he actually needs to let his boss man know that he's angling for that promotion. Maddie tells him that he's gonna rock it. And after he does, she'll be waiting on the corner to congratulate him with hot cocoa. And then they can go ice skating. Woo! They say goodbye, and Hugo finishes packing his office up before
that he... That sounds like a terrible idea. Remember when we went ice skating? You were planning on trying out for a women's ice hockey team?
I was considering playing some, hockey. Yes.
And you dragged me along so we could try our chops on ice skates, because we used to do it so many times when we were growing up as kids.
Uh-huh.
And I got halfway around the rink in the ice skates and turned around and said, nope!
Yeah, I remember that! Memories.
Bringing back the fond memories.
Yeah. But the way that Maddie was suggesting it is that you don't really end up actually doing much ice skating anyways. You just see a guy that you think is cute and you fall into them.
Oh, I'd be good at that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be good at that, yeah. So I think...
You didn't tell me that before we went ice skating for your you probably didn't even have a hockey team you were considering. You're like, let's just go bump into some people.
I think that the small children that were around us would not have appreciated that.
Oh, fair.
So Maddie and Hugo say goodbye, and Hugo finishes packing his office up before he heads out for Christmas vacation. Before Hugo heads out, he drops by the boss man's office. His boss praises him for working on Christmas Eve last year and having excellent billables. And as his boss sits at his imposing desk, and Hugo sits across the room, looking small in the middle of a love seat, Hugo screws up the courage to ask about the partner position. I wanted to ask you about the partner position. He has a hopeful smile on his face. I've interviewed for it 3 times now, but he's interrupted by the boss in the middle of his pitch. You're a details guy. I get it. We love it. And even though you've saved companies with your skills, we just don't think you're ready to be a partner yet. Hugo takes a breath. Mr. Vogel, with all due respect, he says softly but firmly, and can we just talk a moment about calling people Mr. and Miss? Like, how many bosses have you had that you've called by Mr., Miss., Mrs., and their last name?
None. But I haven't been in a corporate environment. Maybe that's a difference. I don't know. I don't think so. Yeah. No, none.
No. Me neither. I've worked in lots of different offices. Nobody's gone by Mr., Miss., Mrs., blah, blah, blah. And when they just throw these into the Hallmark movies and whatnot, I'm like, what kind of world are they living in New York City where you're like, why, it's Mr. Blah, blah, blah. I don't think so.
You see what the problem is, Miss Edding, is that you were not raised properly and probably were not trained correctly when you entered the, work world. So.
Ah, okay. Yeah, so I should just be calling people by Mr., Ms., Mrs. last name while everybody else around me calls them by their first name.
That would probably get you the promotion. Just saying. Uh-huh. If there was a promotion to be had. People... I like that, Miss Edding. There's something about her that just pops out.
I don't know, Miss Cosio. I'm thinking perhaps this is not the way to go. But we could try to you know, spend the rest of the episode calling each other Miss Cosio and Miss Edding.
Nah, let's not do that.
Hugo says, Mr. Vogel, with all due respect, there's only one thing I want for Christmas this year, and it's to get that partner position. And if I don't get it, I will be looking for a new firm in January. Mr. Vogel gets a dubious look on his face. Okay, well, thank you, Hugo. And Hugo gets up, walks out, and does not feel triumphant at all. He is, as I like to say, all full of, oh shit, way to swing for the fences, Hugo. After his ultimatum, Hugo meets Maddie on the street. She narrows her eyes at him as he approaches. What's going on with you? Let's celebrate. It's the end of the semester. I'm done with teaching third graders until the new year, and you put yourself out there at your job. I'm so proud of you. Hugo, who has come prepared to skate with his hockey skates slung over his shoulder, worriedly replies, I think I may have backed myself into a corner. My ultimatum was not well received, and I may end up having to look for a job in the new year. Maddie pish-poshes. You made a bold move. And I'm so proud of you. Speaking of bold moves, she says, as they walk and talk down the busy New York street, I made a bold move myself. You know how I usually go on a big group trip to the Bahamas with my family during Christmas? Well, I told them I was staying in the city this year. I'm the only one without a partner or kids, and I just wanted an old-fashioned wintry Christmas. Hugo's brain hamster starts churning on the wheel and suddenly stops. A light bulb goes off over his head. Ding! Why don't you come to Milwaukee with me? We'd have such a good time together. Maddie looks dubious. I don't know. It's awfully short notice. Hugo interrupts. Come on! My mom loves you. You are going to be more than welcome. You've got to come. Maddie's face lights up. Okay. Hugo whips out his phone and calls his mom, and she immediately picks up. Hugo! Oh my God! Hugo chuckles. Hey, Mom. Maddie and I had a crazy last-minute idea. How would you like it if we came home for Christmas together? Maddie shouts, Hi, Kate! Merry Christmas! And Kate... The answer is
literally,
yes.
That's what she sounded like. Yeah. Shrieks into the phone for longer than I care to comment
yes.
on.
Hugo turns to Maddie and says, You know the first thing she's going to say when she sees me, right? And we cut to the next scene.
Question before we go there. Mm-hmm. Would you turn down a trip to the Bahamas with your family just because you were the only single one there? It's cold. It's winter. It's the motherfucking Bahamas.
Okay, you got me on the whole it's cold, it's winter, it's the motherfucking Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's nice to not be with a whole passel of family.
That's when you go walk in your bikini on a sandy beach and try to look for a cabana boy to bring you a frosty beverage and possibly some loving.
I think we need to go to the Bahamas, Tam.
See? See? Hugo and Maddie. Damn it.
Okay, you have my attention. Jeez.
So stop it. Don't be laughing. You're going to make the frog come back out. Hugo and Maddie arrive, and Mama Kate is on the patio waiting for them. She shrieks, Hugo, you're too skinny! There are warm hugs and greetings all around, and they hustle inside for Mama's famous pancakes, which she makes in Christmas shapes with cookie cutters. Pretty damn clever, if you ask me. They chit-chat about Hugo's brother Aiden coming later that week and how the house has been so quiet since their dad died. Just then, Maddie notices a huge moita board, or rather, what we call a Christmas board, split into calendar squares with tasks written on every day, like Christmas tree decorations and cleaning up the train station. Hugo is livid when he sees it. Really, Mom? It's just like high school. You're going to task us to death. Mama Kate just shrugs. You think you're laying around the next 2 weeks? Nope. And I said, yes, Mom, if I'm on vacation, I want some goddamn downtime. Lady, if I knew this, I would have gone to the Bahamas with Maddie's family. But no, they're getting put to work. After pancakes, they beeline it upstairs to Hugo's childhood room, and he frets about his mother and her tasking. Ooh. Maddie notices a little bear sitting on his bed and asks, "Who's your friend?" It's Hugo's childhood stuffed bear named Todd. Is this worth mentioning? Probably not. I just thought it was adorable that he had a stuffed animal named Todd. Maddie shakes her head and tells him that he was a lost cause before she met him in college their freshman year. Just then, Mama Kate comes in.
"Maddie, I need you to come with me to pick up supplies, and Hugo, you're staying here. The Christmas tree's being delivered."
As the ladies walk out for their supply shopping, Mom hollers over her shoulder,
"And there's a to-do list on the counter."
The woman is a LISC task project aficionado. Not only is there a huge chalkboard to-do list on the wall, there's a little receipt-length to-do list for Hugo to take care of. He shakes his head and screams into Teddy Bear Todd's stomach, but eventually goes downstairs and starts knocking off the tasks one at a time. A short while later, he's on a ladder changing a light bulb, and he sees a vintage red pickup truck. If you have that on your Hallmark bingo, mark it off. Pull into the driveway, and a very handsome man get out. He gasps, "Patrick Ryan!" and then races downstairs towards the door, practically killing himself in the process. He opens the door and tries to play nonchalant, even though he's huffing from running across the house. Patrick's the Christmas tree delivery man. Hubba hubba. And Hugo offers to help get the tree out of the car because, of course, his mom got the biggest and heaviest one on the lot. They each grab an end and hoist it out of Patrick's truck and maneuver it through the yard. Once they get to the front door, Hugo tries to cram the tree, while Patrick tells him it's not going to fit. It's not going to fit. So Hugo bursts out his shears and does some judicious pruning, which is a word I never thought I'd hear in my life. Much to Patrick's dismay. "You can't cut this tree," he gasps. "It's a beaut." But Hugo's already all in. He prunes a few branches and then fits the tree through the doorway. As they shimmy it through the living room, Patrick gives Hugo a look and smiles. "You know, we went to high school together. Jackson High, you were just a few years behind me. You're Hugo, right?" Hugo smiles. "Oh, yeah, good memory. And you're... Patrick answers for him. "Patrick." Hugo nods enthusiastically. "Yes, yes, yes, that's right." He's really trying hard to play it cool. They shuffle the Christmas tree over to the stand and work together to get it perfectly straight. As they're maneuvering it into the stand, Hugo looks up and mumbles, "Straight?" Patrick leans down, confused. "I'm sorry, pardon?" And then Hugo repeats, "The tree, is it straight?" "Oh, yes, yes, the tree's straight, but Patrick sure isn't." They get the tree in. Patrick takes his work gloves off, compliments Hugo on his cute tool belt, and they part ways. But not before Hugo makes an ass out of himself and offers Patrick a tip for the trouble of bringing the tree in. Patrick tries to decline it. Hugo insists, so he reluctantly takes the cash and leaves.
When Mom, a.k.a. Kate, and Maddie get back from shopping, Kate discovers that Patrick left his dirty work gloves on her clean couch and gives them to Hugo. When Kate goes off to the other room, Hugo snags Maddie and they go upstairs, where he conspiratorially shares with her that Patrick, whose senior superlative was most likely to take over the world, was even dreamy back in high school, where he was class president. Hugo, who was not out in high school, secretly drooled over the upperclassmen.
Remember when we were looking at our Shepherd yearbook not too long ago together? And there was the cutest couple?
Uh-huh.
And you looked at him, you're like, "Oh, honey, you know that boy is gay by now."
Seriously, though?
He was impeccably dressed and had a hairdo that the flock of seagulls would envy. It was quite impressive.
It was quite impressive. He had a little, frosted tips. Like, he had it all together.
Mm-hmm. Looked like he was in an 80s new wave band.
Yes.
And pulled it off flawlessly. And I was just like, "Oh, they're cute." Because I really thought, like, they were a cute couple. Yeah. And Corinne's like, "He's so gay now. I guarantee you, he's so gay." I'm like, fair.
My gaydar may have been really off in middle school when I kind of had a crush on the guy who would do the whole Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation dance scenes in front of the classroom, who shockingly turned out to be gay.
Wow.
Uh-huh. Huh. Who would have thunk? It's not much better now, but it is to some degree, and I picked up on a few clues.
And of course, there was our friend Steven, who used to walk around reciting the infomercials for Poe Cream. "You just put this Poe Cream on your skin and you look 20 years younger." With all the swishy, saucy accent power that he had in him.
Yes.
Yep.
He was so straight, though.
Was he?
It never occurred to me that he was gay until...
Are you kidding me?
Until I saw him as an adult.
That is so... I thought I told this story. Maybe I have not. And if you've heard this before...
No, please share it with our gentle listeners.
Yes, yes. Steven used to come over to my house quite often because he was Steven, and I was like, yeah, come over, let's go do something, whatever. And my grandmother came home and found us on the dining room table looking at magazines. The horror.
So you were having sex. That's a euphemism for sex, right? Looking at magazines?
No, we were looking at magazines and admiring the women's makeup. Anyways, perv, my grandma came home and she got so mad, and she was like, she sent him away. And then when I was sitting there, she's like, you can't have boys here when nobody's here. Your parents aren't here. You can't have boys. That's against the rules. And I'm like, it's not a boy. It's Steven. And somehow I knew that he was safe, but I didn't know how to articulate it to her. I'm just like, Steven's not going to do anything. Yeah. I can't tell you how or why. I just know. And I was right.
Or at least he's not going to do anything to you, although he may tear out a few pages of those magazines for inspiration.
Yes, and that's quite all right. I will let him.
Maddie gets a mischievous look on her face. Well, then, I guess we're going to need to get these gloves back to him. She waves the gloves in the air, and the next thing we know, we see Maddie and Hugo downtown.
Ooh.
On their way to the tree lot, Hugo and Maddie pass by the train station. They stop by and peer in the windows. This is where we get a rundown on the history of the train station. Edgar Carroll was a real estate developer. He built the train station and pretty much the whole town, including the library and the elementary school. And now the train station is where the town gathers on Christmas Eve. People write their letters to Santa, and when they get put on the Christmas Express, which is the last train to the North Pole before Christmas, well, it's a commuter train with a big red bow on it, but, you know, Christmas magic and all. Carroll created this tradition in 1920.
Oh.
How does Hugo know all of this? Well, he was a tour guide for one summer.
Of course he was.
As they walk off, Hugo sees a coming soon poster and is appalled. They are going to demolish the classic brick train station and turn it into a modern bus stop looking train kiosk. He is not happy. Maddie distracts him. Well, at least we still get to run into Patrick, she says, waving the gloves alluringly in front of his face, and starts heading off towards the tree lot. Hugo is indignant. Don't try and cheer me up, Maddie says. I'm not. You have 5 minutes to be mad between here and the tree lot. At the tree lot, Patrick sees Hugo and is puzzled as to why he is there. He approaches Hugo. Is your...
Love. He's there for love.
He's there for winky winky. Like... Mm-hmm.
He's there for a little Christmas magic, if you know what I mean. Ooh.
I'll take some Christmas magic from him. Hello. Hugo responds, oh no. Maddie slaps the gloves into Hugo, who grabs them, offering them to Patrick. Your gloves! You left them. Patrick's face lights up. I was looking all over for these. Man, when I get distracted. Hugo smiles. You were distracted? Patrick stammers. The tree and... Maddie clears her throat. And snuggles up to Hugo. Hugo doesn't take his eyes off Patrick, but introduces them to each other. Maddie is suddenly acting very coupley with Hugo, and I'm not exactly sure why. She tells Patrick, it's a miracle we're even here. We never get to take vacations anymore. Patrick looks confused. A thought bubble pops up over his head. I thought you were gay, but it looks like you have a wife or a girlfriend? ?
Over touchy feely bestie, perhaps? Maddie, back the fuck off.
Seriously. I just haven't been affectionate enough with you recently. I think that's the problem with our relationship. I just need to cuddle up to you
no.
more.
No, it's fine. No, you really have been okay on that front. Don't you worry. That's great. Look at that cute lesbian couple that has a podcast about Hallmark movies.
Another layer is added to the confusion when Hugo looks over at Maddie. She thinks I work too much. She playfully stabs his chest. No, this is not a murder movie.
Wow.
She playfully slaps his chest. Well, you do. But Hugo has his eyes on the prize, a little more time with Patrick. So he continues to make small talk and asks him questions. This is where we discover that Patrick donates all the tree sales to his foundation, which helps Milwaukee small businesses get started. And this year, part of the proceeds go to the Carroll Avenue Neighborhood Foundation, which Hugo's mom is currently president of. Apparently, Patrick developed the Cassandra app, created a company, sold it, and is now retired and returned back home to Milwaukee. The Cassandra app predicts statistical probabilities of things happening, basically a more sophisticated magic eight ball. Hugo doesn't know what the app is, but Maddie is super excited. The older kids at her school love using it, mainly to ask about love. Ooh. Patrick ends up getting pulled away by his dad because things are busy at the lot, and Hugo and Maddie head back home.
Man, it was a wild ride.
I know.
The next day at the Spencer house, the family's outside setting up a huge tent when Patrick and his father arrive with the poinsettia delivery. Ooh. Boy, that Patrick pops up a lot in their house throughout this whole movie.
Hey there.
Frank! Mama Cat shrieks. I haven't seen you in forever since all those PTA meetings. Patrick introduces his father to Hugo and introduces Maddie as Hugo's wife? Question mark. Maddie giggles uncontrollably and says, that's the best joke I've heard all year. As she continues laughing, Hugo looks at her incredulously and mutters, it's not that funny. Maddie explains, we've just been best friends since our freshman year in college. And Patrick looks relieved. Oh, it's just you guys seem so close and you're finishing each other's sentences? No, we don't, they both say simultaneously. Mama Kate chimes in, waving her finger between the two of them, trying to be helpful. Gay, straight, single. And Patrick wants clarification. Wait, who's what? Gay? Mama Kate points at Hugo. Gay, Maddie. Straight. Both of them. Single. Patrick gets a little hope in his eyes and seizes the opportunity and asks Hugo to help him get the decorations out of his truck. Hugo practically runs after him. As they're unloading, Patrick asks him on a hot chocolate date. Ooh. There's a great truck that sits outside of my Christmas tree lot. You should stop by. It's the best. Hugo begs to differ. He knows the best hot chocolate place and happens to be in New York by Mario Ansetti, who puts a bittersweet chocolate truffle inside the marshmallows on top of the cocoa.
Mm, that sounds delicious.
Patrick, that sounds pretentious.
Sounds delicious.
Patrick says that sounds very pretentious. And Hugo nods enthusiastically. Yes, yes, it is. He knows who he is. But he is willing to take the cocoa challenge and agrees to meet Patrick that evening for a little hot, steamy beverage rendezvous at 7. Ooh. Hugo's trying to downplay it, but we all see the little hearts floating out of his eyes, and he follows Patrick as they return to their families. The next night, Hugo goes to the Christmas tree farm, but Patrick's not there. He's still out making deliveries, so Hugo decides to try the cocoa at the stand while he's waiting, which struck me as odd because I thought they would have cocoa together, unless he's a cocoholic and is going to have one before and then another one when Patrick gets there.
I don't know.
Current thoughts?
My thoughts are if I've been waiting for the guy who I'm supposed to be meeting up with for a while, I might as well make some lemons out of lemonade and grab a beverage is my thoughts.
Okay. Hugo tries the beverage and proclaims that it's pretty good. And then he wanders around, peeks in the train station window, and hears someone say, Hugo! Behind him, it's his cousin Jimmy! They share a warm embrace, and Hugo asks about the station, and if Jimmy couldn't stop him from tearing it down. His cousin shrugs. He tried. Everybody tried. Even Mama Kate threatened to tie herself to the building in order to save it, but there was nothing anybody could do. Jimmy's got to go, but they'll see each other at the Santa breakfast, which sounds awesome, and I wish I was invited. Oh, wait, it's probably just breakfast with Santa Claus there. Never
yeah.
mind.
I was like, how awesome is, do you think? What were you thinking?
Holiday-themed and holiday-shaped food, breakfast foods.
Aw, that sounds fun.
No, I'm sad. I know, I was like, Santa breakfast. Oh, wait, I know what happens. It is just a breakfast with Santa
yeah.
there. Oh, shit. I thought it was going to be like the pancakes and the cookie cutter shapes and maybe like some little crushed peppermint like sprinkled on top or
Aww.
Something. I don't know. Now I'm sad.
We could do Santa breakfast for part of our Christmas celebration this year.
Okay.
Without Santa, but with like the cute Santa accoutrement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, wear a Santa hat. That would be... Anyways, I'm sad and so is Hugo because he continues wandering, waiting for his lost love. We don't know how long he was there, but it was long enough to finish his hot cocoa because we see him toss the empty cup into the trash. He starts sadly walking away just as Patrick runs up apologizing profusely. I'm so sorry I got caught in a delivery. The tree wouldn't fit in the elevator. And now I have to help my dad close. If you could just hang around for just a little bit longer, it should take us like an hour and we could still hang out. I'm guessing Hugo's bitter because he says, no, thank you. It's been a long night. And he heads out. Personally, I would have waited the hour for Patrick because he's fine as hell.
Yes.
But Patrick asks if he's sure. Hugo is. And they go their separate ways. I'm going to say something about Patrick's father. Every time that, like, Patrick is kind of getting close to Hugo or wants to spend time with Hugo, his dad's like, Patrick, there's customers at the tree farm. Can you come over and help me? Patrick, I need help closing two times when you're supposed to meet this guy. Come over here. Like, is dad trying to cock block him?
I don't know. I think that I thought the dad was trying to get in with Kate. Little winky. Oh, no. Winky.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, how hard is it to close a tree lot? I don't know. Back at the Spencer house, the next day, Hugo's helping his mom pull more decorations out of the basement. She asks how the date was, and he shrugs and mumbles, well, at least the chocolate was good. He tells her about being stood up and how it's probably best that they don't see each other because he's only there for 2 weeks, and Patrick's really busy. They pull some lights off a work table, and he realizes it's his dad's old woodworking table, complete with tools and a broken chair off to the side. Mama Kate nods at the chair. Yeah, that broken. We're going to be one chair short for Christmas. I'll probably fix it eventually. But just then, there's a knock on the door, and it's Patrick. Bring! Who magically appears once again at the Spencer house with all of his Christmas magic. Patrick's at the door. Bring! So, do you think Patrick showed up of his own accord, or that Mama Kate was like, Patrick, why don't you come over here? We're going to be putting up decorations, and you should just, like, I heard you and Hugo didn't connect last night. Just come over.
I go for option number two.
Okay,
absolutely.
Good.
Absolutely. Yes.
Because he showed up at his house, like, uninvited or whatever, like, four times, and I'm like, that's a little bit stalkery unless somebody's telling him to come over at a certain time. You know what I mean?
I think this all has to do with Mama Kate.
Mm-hmm. Patrick's there to talk to Hugo. He wants to apologize and still wants to take him out for the cocoa challenge. Mom feels the heat between them that's not generated by a chocolatey beverage and asks Patrick if he could help her son go string up some lights, you know? String up some lights on the roof. Winky, winky.
Winky, winky.
Winky, winky. Mama Kate says, us girls certainly can't do it because they don't have arms or know how to use ladders or anything.
I know. It's really hard.
Yeah. When you have to, like, try to climb up the ladder one leg and arm at a time and you just, like, fall back on your keister because it's too complicated.
It's so complicated.
So tough. I know. They should have, like, a warning. Women cannot use these. Mm. Patrick agrees enthusiastically and Mama Kate hustles out of there, leaving the two of them alone. Patrick prattles around, notices the workbench and a little project sitting in a plastic bin. What's this? He asks as he pulls out a tiny house figurine. Oh, Hugo explains, that was something me and my dad started like 1,000 years ago. It's supposed to be Carroll Street, our neighborhood. We're making it as a surprise for my mom. Patrick has some serious kiss tractor beam action going on, and Hugo feels it because he shrugs and says, wait, I mean, wait, let's get these lights up or else my mom will dock our pay. He's trying to fight the heat, and it's not working.
Ooh. Up on the rooftop. Hugo and Pat are stringing lights going tap, tap, tap. Patrick tells Hugo he has regrets. Selling Cassandra was a big hot mess. Ho, 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 who wouldn't go? Ho, 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 who wouldn't go? Up on the rooftop with Hugo and Pat, hanging lights with a tap, tap, tap.
Oh my God, you're a fucking genius.
So, you weren't expected to follow anything in that song. I will reframe it in actual words.
No, I caught that completely. I'm right there with you.
While Patrick and Hugo are on the rooftop hanging lights, they flirt a bit and then Patrick gets vulnerable. He lets Hugo know that sometimes he wishes he hadn't sold Cassandra. A rival company tried to lay claim to it, lawyers were involved, and it was a big hot mess. Fuck, lawyers suck, says Patrick, shaking his head. Hugo smiles.
Well, surprise! I'm a lawyer! Jazz hands, jazz hands, jazz hands!
Patrick chuckles. Of course. My cardinal rule to avoid lawyers unless absolutely necessary has been broken. Just then, the box that Hugo was taking lights out of pushes against the ladder and it crashes to the ground. And Patrick accuses, "You did that on purpose. Now I'm stuck on the roof with a lawyer." Hugo is indignant. "I did not," they both yell for Kate and Maddie, but the ladies, who are enjoying cocoa in the kitchen within earshot, just chuckle and enjoy their girl chat together. Eventually, they are released from the roof, and apparently Kate is hosting a whole Christmas party in her front yard. The main event is imminent. Santa! However, there's trouble. Kate pulls Maddie, Hugo, and Patrick from the wreath-making into the house. Cousin Jimmy, who has the perfect Santa figure, is looking very uncomfortable on his stool. His sciatica has flared up, and he can't be having all those kids sitting on his lap. It's obvious to Kate that Hugo is the perfect replacement.
How?
I know, right? Hugo begrudgingly agrees, and Maddie, Patrick, and Hugo go upstairs to help him get ready. For some reason, they don't bother stuffing the costume, so he's the skinniest Santa ever.
Mm-hmm.
But Patrick does do a kind of hug-around pin job to help get the suit to fit right and also be close to Hugo. Yeah. Hugo makes it decent.
No, that's the wrong noise. That's a single hot father. You gotta think of another noise for gay coppin' a feelsy Santa fitting time.
Okay. You just get back to me on that one.
Okay.
Hugo makes it a decent and very thin Santa who reads The Night Before Christmas to excited kids while Patrick watches him with hearts in his eyes. After the wreath-making party, Patrick and Hugo are cleaning up alone. Patrick effuses, "I love how you let go and have fun out there. Not everybody would." Hugo scoffs. "My friends wouldn't describe me as letting go. More neurotic and uptight." Patrick responds, looking at him with heart eyes. "Well, sometimes it's good to hear what someone else thinks of you." He pauses and then says, "I know you aren't around for much longer, but would you like to hang out after I get off work at 10 tomorrow night?" A who's-on-first situation ensues where Patrick thinks Hugo's saying no while Hugo is trying to say yes, but eventually it's all cleared up, and they are on for a hot, sexy evening.
What? What? The next night for their hot, sexy evening.
Whoop,
whoop. Hugo goes to the Christmas tree farm.
Ooh.
Yay, nothing says hot, sweet loving like Christmas trees.
Oh, but this is...
Oh, no, yeah. No, yeah. Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. Hugo can't find Patrick anywhere. He wanders through the trees a little frustrated. Where the heck is he? Oh. He finally comes across Patrick, who has a whole Christmas tree patio set up, complete with sandwiches, drinks, twinkle lights, fresh baked cookies, and a fucking fire pit. Hugo marvels at the fucking setup.
It's so romantical and Christmas magic-y, and can you imagine being there amongst all the trees with all that beautiful Christmas tree set all around you with the fire pit?
Panties would drop. Panties would drop.
Uh-huh. For real.
Patrick asks if it's too much, and Hugo says, "It is, but I like it."
Yes.
Everybody likes it.
Yes.
But wonders how Patrick knew that sub sandwiches were his favorite. Pat shrugs nonchalantly and says, "I asked Cassandra. I put your information in. You're a lawyer who lives in New York, probably doesn't cook a lot, works late, and it guessed that you would like submarine sandwiches." That and the fact that you used to work at Mario's Deli in high school. Hugo's taken aback. "You remember that? Of course, I was one of your customers." "Oh, I know," Hugo says, "and your order was always an Italian sub with some extra pepperoncini." He clenches his teeth, realizing he let on a little too much, and says, I think." It's obvious to each other and all of us that they were well aware of each other in high school.
Yeah, I think Patrick's gaydar was like, beep, 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 whenever he saw Hugo.
Yeah. Hugo tells Patrick that he was always super impressed that he was out and proud in high school and everyone loved him. He was Mr. Popularity, and Patrick says, "Well, sit, burp, 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 stop right there." "Yes, I might have been Mr. Popularity, but I was also Mr. Lonely."
Aww.
And then he goes on to tell him his origin story of how he went to college, wound up dropping out, followed a guy to the Silicon Valley. It didn't work out, but luckily he figured out there that he liked coding and Cassandra was born. After he sold the company, he knew that he needed to give back, and plenty of people are philanthropists in the Bay Area, but not a lot are in Milwaukee, so he set forth to fix that. He says it's a great time to be alive. We have a youth queer center here, and the drag presence is growing. Hugo is mesmerized and whispers, "Very cool." Patrick asks him, "What?" To which Hugo shrugs and says, "Oh, it's just really good to be back." They drink their beverages while gazing at each other over the rims of their cups. Hugo heads home a little while later and sees his mom and Maddie laughing and having a good time through the kitchen window. He's not ready to join them yet. He still wants to bask in the glow of his potential new love. He goes into the wood shop and fixes the broken chair. The next morning, Mama Kate sees the chair and is so touched.
"Oh, Hugo, you shouldn't have the chairs fixed."
They hug and she wants the deets about last night. But Hugo shuts that shit down. "Mom, I don't need you meddling in my life. I'm not 16 anymore." But she can't help it. Patrick's smart and handsome and rich. Hugo reminds her that he's not going to be around for very long. So Mama Kate switches gears and slides over a very old, very heavy-looking key and tells him, "Cousin Jimmy dropped us off last night. It's the key to the train station." Hugo is ecstatic. "When can he go?" he asks. "Well, right now. Let's go wake up all these sleeping beauties." They go to the train station because they need to plot their decorating. The place is old. It must have been magnificent back in the day. I don't think it looks very magnificent today, but nope. I digress. Corinne, thoughts?
I agree. It looks like a basic brick building. It doesn't look very cute or quaint or anything like that. And I loves me some antique-y, cute, quaint shit, but that is not it.
Yeah. It's just your basic bitch building. Yeah. And the fact that everybody marvels over it. Oh, it's so wonderful. Oh, it's so beautiful. It's so old and historic. It's looks like it could have been built in the 70s.
I will say that I do actually kind of prefer it, though, over the drawing of the modern train.
Yes.
Pagoda or whatever the shit that was.
Right.
Because that was, mm-hmm. Yeah, that was just some sad shit right there.
Looks like a BART station.
Yeah, I was thinking, I was like, oh, it looks like something that San Jose would have created for one of their light mm-hmm. rail trains to stop at. Had 90s written all over it.
I had a thought, though, because I had the same kind of feeling. I'm like, they're going to make that big monstrosity instead of this old brick building. But if you think about it, like, that monstrosity is kind of open air, so people can come sit and wait at 5 o'clock in the morning for their train that's not going to get there at 6:30. But the brick building is enclosed. It's got windows. I'm sure it's partial to vandalism a lot more. Like, you can't leave it open all the time like you could that big honking whatever the heck they were building.
Yeah, I was
convenience.
I was assuming that on the other side of the building, which we never saw, there was a, you know, a covered area where people could sit on benches and wait for their train that was outside.
But we don't see it and we'll never know. Lifetime do better. Just like the Hallmark Channel does with their stylish set design. Take a note.
You're so funny.
I know. I was like, that's a joke. Never mind. If you don't get that, watch a Hallmark movie and you'll get it, like, within the first 10 minutes. Anyways, after they finish checking out the station, they go back home. And who shows up but Hugo's brother, Aiden! Mama Kate's so excited to see him, she makes noise that most dogs could probably hear. And I had to turn down my TV the second time I watched it because she's a lovely lady, but she is shrill.
Oh, but your Fran Drescher imitation is...
That's
beautiful.
Because I got a frog in my throat and it's so bad right now. I'm like, might as well utilize it. I can't do it all the time, dear listeners. I am so sorry because you're like, you had a Fran portion where you didn't do the voice. It's because I probably would have hacked up a lung. So, the Spencer family gives hugs and greetings all around except Maddie. She looks at Aiden and he looks at her and they kind of size each other up. Oh, you look good. Oh, no, you look good. I haven't seen you forever. I haven't seen you in forever. There are little sparks flying between them, but nobody seems to notice.
I do.
I did, too. I was like, oh, honey, nobody's going to turn around. Just look, open your eyes. Open your eyes and see it. Open your eyes. Aiden tells his brother that he's just been stationed back in the U.S. from Germany and then follows his mom into the kitchen so she could feed him, because that's what moms do. When he's gone, Maddie hurriedly whispers to Hugo, "Oh, he looks so different. I haven't seen him since he went into the military." But he's grossed out. "Ew, stop." Maddie doesn't care and talks about how guys tend to deteriorate in their 30s. They let themselves go with ugly Christmas sweaters, fanny packs, and cargo shorts. Hugo defends cargo shorts. They have so many pockets with so many uses. And Maddie playfully stabs him in the chest.
Maddie, nice.
Maddie, no. I said Maddie playfully stabs him in the chest. No! Instead of smacks him in the chest, because you said that earlier. I said smacks, but I just added the stab because, you know, a little yeah. Intrigue. Did she stab him? Is she a serial killer? Mm. Does she just want to come to the Spencer house so she can moita? No. That's the wrong month. Maddie playfully smacks him on the chest. "I'm sorry. I forgot I was describing you with all that cargo short and fanny pack mess." They join the others in the kitchen, and Aiden has already noticed the huge moita board on the kitchen wall. Hugo informs him it's just going to be like high school all over again, days chock full of activities. Mama Kate tells him not to get comfortable because they're going to go caroling in a bit, and she invited Patrick. Hugo cries, "Mom!" And Maddie.
I love how you keep on calling her Maddie.
That's her real name. It's not Madison. It's not Madeline. It's Maddie.
Maddie.
Maddie claps excitedly. "Yes, yes, 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 yes." And Aiden asks, "Who's Patrick?" "Oh, you'll find out, Aiden. You will find out."
That evening, Patrick arrives at the front door for caroling. Hugo starts to apologize, but Patrick is all in and happy to be there. And, ugh, the way Patrick looks at Hugo. Oh, swoon.
There's a couple of parts where I was like, hard eyes, hard eyes, hard eyes. That's the definition of hard eyes. If you look hard eyes in the dictionary, that's a picture of Patrick's face.
Oh my gosh. He was like giving me so like the butterfly feelings. I was like,
I know. And then when you find out that they're actually married, I'm like, oh, that makes so much sense.
Major butterfly moments. Inside, Mom has a box full of hats to really make the event festive. She gives the derby to Patrick and a big-ass top hat to Hugo, much to his chagrin. Hugo is super embarrassed, but Patrick tells him he looks great as they head out into the night to sing for the people of Carol Street. Carol on Carol Street. Wah! Wagga, wagga, wagga. While they're out singing, Hugo gets a call from his boss, Mr. Vogel. His ultimatum worked. They want to make him partner as long as he's willing to open their new office in London. Heyo.
Why would they need a legal office in London when the laws are so very different there?
I don't know, but I am sure that Hugo has his little white wiggy cap ready to go. They're very, very different there. It is true. Hugo enthusiastically accepts the offer, but has a little reservation on his face when he rejoins his family and friends. He is suddenly full of, oh shit, once again. The next day at the train station, everybody is working hard on decorating. Maddie knows something is up with Hugo, and they take a moment to steal away from the group and chat. He shares the news, and while she's bummed that they won't be living close to each other anymore, she's super excited for him. He's uncertain, though. Nothing is set yet, so I don't know for sure what is actually going to happen. Everything is still really up in the air. Please promise not to mention this to anyone. And Maddie agrees. I'm wondering if there's going to be a curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal moment with that conversation.
I sense one in the future. Yes, yes. I sense something on the horizon. It looks to be a curse and a trail, but I can't make out what's in between.
While Maddie and Hugo are chatting outside, Aiden is inside, and he asks his mom if she knows if Maddie is single. Winky, winky. She says that she doesn't, but encourages Aiden to ask her because life is short. Once Maddie comes inside, Aiden ends up helping her, and they have a cute, flirty moment with each other until Aiden gets called away by Kate. Patrick arrives with the trees for the room, and Patrick and Hugo set them up.
Hugo posits that Christmas is really for gay people, and the tree, well, the tree is like a drag queen. He gestures to the tree they've decorated that is decked out with ball ornaments and has a large gold ribbon woven through it. Patrick chuckles and then changes the topic, asking Hugo if he's ever considered moving back home. Hugo responds as he hangs an ornament on the tree. It's something I've been thinking about a lot recently. It's a big decision, something I've been wrestling with. Patrick looks at him quizzically. Wrestling with what? It hasn't been me. I even did that romantical dinner for you at the Christmas tree lot, and no wrestling happened there. I was a little surprised we didn't end the evening with at least a kiss, but I'm just saying is all.
Hugo gets a deer in the headlights look. It looks like we need more ornaments. Do you mind getting some?
Patrick agrees, and Hugo walks over to Maddie. She can tell he's distressed, and he confesses, "What am I even doing? I'm going home right after Christmas, and then who knows how long it will be till I next see him." She consoles him, but there are no answers to be had in the moment. Alone, alone, alone.
Alone, alone, alone.
Patrick and Hugo finish decorating the tree, and Patrick gestures towards some stairs. "What's that?" Hugo explains, "It's Mr. Carroll's office. I used to go up there as a kid and look through the window at all the old stuff in his office." Patrick gets a sly smile on his face. "Wanna show me?" And with that, Hugo and Patrick go upstairs, if you know what I mean. Oh, winky, winky. Well,
yeah.
If it were any other movie, it would be winky, winky, but it's a Lifetime Christmas movie, which means they talk about Mr. Carroll and the mystery of why he started the Christmas celebration. Shh, it's a mystery.
Secrets.
Oh,
mystery.
Yes. And secrets. Yes.
Secrets and mysteries.
Back at the Christmas tree farm, Maddie is there to pick up wreaths, only to find Aiden already there. They realize that Mama Kate sent them both there.
Ooh, Mama Kate.
So tricksy. Maddie suggests that Kate got her wires crossed, but Aiden knows better. Maddie says hopefully, "Well, maybe she's planning on having us cross paths again later." Aiden gets a twinkle in his eyes. "Why don't we foil her Machiavellian plan and intentionally meet up later?" Maddie is on board. Choo-choo! All aboard the Romance Express. Aiden gives great love eyes as well. He's also gay in real life.
Is he?
Yes.
Poor Maddie. She has so many gay men in her life. She didn't even realize. Back at the train station, Hugo's tracked down the keys to Mr. Carroll's office. And it is glorious in all of its vintage charm that has not been touched in years and years and years. There's maps and a conductor's cap, glasses still on the desk. He and Patrick go inside to investigate, and Hugo goes straight for the glasses and puts them on. Patrick grabs a conductor's hat from the wall and places it on Hugo's head to complete the look. Then they start rifling through ledgers and paperwork. Hugo finds out that Mr. Carroll didn't have any family and left a majority of his estate to somebody named D. Ashby. Patrick, meanwhile, is looking through old photo albums and notices many of the portraits are of Mr. Carroll and Mr. Ashby traveling the world together. They look at him closely, and Patrick asks, "Do you think they were gay?" This lights a fire under Hugo. Not only is the train station beloved by him and all the town members, if this was created by a gay man, then by golly, he's going to preserve it. He grabs a ledger off the table, stacks some old folders and paperwork into his arm as Patrick tries to talk him out of it. But Hugo cannot be deterred. Besides, he'll return everything eventually. As they're going to leave, Patrick stands in front of him and gazes into his eyes with those goddamn hearts in them. They get closer and closer, only to have Patrick pluck the conductor's hat off of his head and return it to the wall. Hugo looks a little bit disappointed, but Patrick comes back, leans in a little bit closer as if he's going to kiss him. But at the last second, before their lips touch, they're so close, and his phone alarm goes off. It's Cassandra.
Just because your phone went off doesn't mean you can't follow through with the kiss and then look at your phone.
Oh, no, we have established this. Let's recap from last season.
Kisses interrupt us.
Phone goes off, you cannot kiss. Dog walks across your path. You cannot kiss. Leaf falls on your head. You cannot kiss. Somebody calls your name. Normally in the real world, you'd be like, get the fuck out of here, Claire. But no, in Hallmark and Lifetime, you cannot kiss. Kiss us, interrupt us.
Apparently, because you have Melody in your life, you ain't getting kissed by nobody.
Oh, yes, I am.
You're like, I am not in a Hallmark or Lifetime movie.
I would literally push her to the side and be like, just give me a second. Let me pull it. Melody, move. God damn it, Mike. When did you get so heavy? You're leaving a little hair trail on the cat. Shit. Okay. So where were we?
You pull out a dustbuster and you're like vacuuming while you kiss. Yeah.
I am rubbing hair off my beau's face. I need to brush her. I'm so sorry about that. Wait, let me just make sure it's all off before you open your mouth. I don't want to get it all like that. And that's a sweet, sweet loving you get at my house.
Ooh.
And his phone alarm goes off. It's Cassandra. She calls you? Hugo asks. And Patrick shrugs. Yeah, if I program her to. Whatever Patrick sees on the screen excites him, and he says he'll explain later. What did he find on that screen? What did the phone say? We'll find out after this break. What was on his phone, you ask? Why? It was an alert for the Northern Lights. They get into his truck, and he takes Hugo to a remote area far from the Milwaukee Lights for a date? They sit in the back of his truck and wait to see if they'll luck out. There's a 42% chance the Northern Lights will show up. Patrick asked Cassandra to alert him to when the best odds were to see the Northern Lights this far north, because they don't usually make it to Milwaukee. Hugo doesn't like those odds, but Patrick asks him to be patient. Sometimes you have to have a little faith. Then he goes on to wax poetic about the particles and what causes the lights and the rarity of the colors. Hugo teases that he thought he was the biggest nerd on the date. Patrick doesn't care. He's a nerd and he knows it. He talks more about the particles and the spontaneous reason the lights show up. And Hugo says, oh, thank you so much, Encyclopedia Brown. Patrick's not familiar with the name, so Hugo explains that Encyclopedia Brown was one of his favorite books growing up and his first boyfriend. Patrick looks at him and says, well, the nerd ball is back in your court, sir.
What was your relationship with Encyclopedia Brown?
I think I might have read one, maybe two of the books. I was a Nancy Drew girl myself.
Oh, I was on the Encyclopedia Brown train. Yeah,
that tracks. Yeah. You were much more Encyclopedia Brown. I was much more Nancy Drew.
I was more of a Trixie Belden kind of gal.
I have no idea who that is.
Yeah, she's more obscure. But she's like Nancy Drew, except a tomboy.
Got it. Well, now who's the bigger nerd between the two of us? I guess you, because you knew about Trixie and I didn't. You win.
Yay!
They chuckle over which one of them is the bigger nerd, and Hugo's catching the feels. So he invites Patrick to his family's Christmas trivia night. It's all trivia questions based only on Christmas. Patrick agrees. You cannot keep him away. Hugo wants to leave shortly after because it's freezing, but Patrick encourages him to stay. They gaze into each other's eyes, and Hugo asks Patrick if Cassandra's app can really predict love. Patrick knows it's just an algorithm that predicts the chances, but he believes... .. He doesn't get to finish that statement because Hugo shrieks, and he takes after his mom in that way. Not a shrill, but a good shriek. The Northern Lights have made an appearance after all.
Aww.
And Hugo and Patrick kiss underneath them, and it's a nice one.
Aww.
A little later, the family is gathering for that game of Christmas trivia.
Yay.
It's in the Spencer's living room, and Mama Kate explains the rules. All questions are Christmas. You get something right, you get a point. You get something wrong, you get no points. But you will get the clanging of a bell in your ear. And the winner will get the Franken trophy, which looks like a bunch of action figures glued into a cup that Aiden made when he was younger. First question is, who invented the first string of lights? Maddie guesses Thomas Edison. Ding, 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 ding. She's right. Second question, at the end of the Charlie Brown Christmas, what song do all the kids sing? Patrick guesses, Hark the Herald Angels. Ding, 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 ding. He is correct. we get a montage of competitive play all around. At the end, it's brother against brother for one last question. What city was the story Christmas Carol written in? Hugo thinks it's Portsmouth and calls it out, while Aiden calls out London. Mama Kate clangs the bell. London! London is the right answer! And Maddie accidentally blurts out, oh, and that's where you're going to be moving to. The air gets sucked out of the room. The cat's out of the bag. And Hugo explains to everyone about his promotion, how he made partner but has to open the office in London. Everyone's happy / devastated, especially Mom and Patrick. After the bomb's dropped, the bomb of information, Patrick leaves feigning work responsibilities. Maddie meets Hugo outside and apologizes for letting the cat out of the bag and asks him if London is really where he wants to go, because had it been in his heart, he would have said something a long time ago. Mm-hmm. He's not sure, but he tells her that he's had a day, he's tired, and to tell everyone else that he went to bed.
After Hugo goes to bed, Aiden and Maddie have a glass of wine together, have a cozy chat, and make hard eyes at each other. The next morning, Hugo rushes off to the tree lot to see Patrick. He apologizes to Patrick for not letting him know, but confesses that he's not really sure if he's going to take the job. Patrick says it's fine not to know what's around the corner and that they should still enjoy the time that they have together. Patrick invites Hugo, Aiden, and Maddie to a show that night at a lounge. He smiles and a little sparkle lights up his eyes, and Hugo, encouraged, says yes. Later that day, Hugo is in the workshop finishing his mom's Christmas present, while his brother Aiden joins him by painting glitter snow. Maddie comes in and brings the demolition permit papers to Hugo. Hugo is so excited by this, he ditches Maddie and Aiden with his glitter snow and goes to the train station to see his mom.
They had a cute moment in that garage when they were doing the work. Because he was like, here, I'm going to put you to work. He gives Aiden one of the little houses to decorate. And he's like, paint windows on this. And Aiden's like, I want to do the glitter snow. And Hugo's like, oh, you've made your gay brother so very happy.
Yay! Straight guys can like glitter too. Gosh darn it.
Yeah, and if it's between painting windows, like little lines, or glitter snow, give me glitter snow all day long.
Yes, all day, every day.
Glitter, 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 glitter. Glitter, 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 glitter.
At the train station, Kate and cousin Jimmy are in full decoration mode. Hugo comes in with big news. According to the paperwork that Hugo took from Carol's office, the city doesn't own the train station. He left it to the Carol Avenue Neighborhood Association.
What?
Therefore, the city can't demolish it. Mama Kate is thrilled and asks what they can do now. Hugo says, find a good lawyer. And she knows one. It's him! Ha!
And later that night, it is the potty, potty, potty. Hugo, Maddie, and Aiden go to the lounge to meet Patrick. It's a Christmas pop-up drag show! Outside the building is a pretty nondescript brick building, but inside it's all light, gay, and fabulous. The group see Patrick across the way amongst a bevy of very attractive people and one of the cutest retro drag queens I've ever seen, Gladys Claus. Patrick beelines towards them and tells them they have an open night. An open mic. Open night. Ooh, I'm going to insinuate a lot of things. They have an open mic and maybe Hugo could be persuaded to sing a song or two since he was so good at caroling. Hugo says, hard pass, but they do find a table and peruse the festive drink menu choices, such as Prancer's Punch, Gin and Comet, and Rum Rum Rudolph. Very cute. Maddie and Aiden go grab the drinks, aka giving the two guys some alone time, and Hugo tells them he found some good news about the train station, but Patrick doesn't wait to hear it. He finally tells Hugo he wishes he wasn't moving so far away. He likes having him around, but Hugo is anti-long distance. Patrick tries selling Milwaukee hard. He doesn't want this to end. They make heart eyes at each other as Aiden and Maddie come back with drinks. The liquid courage couldn't come at a more perfect time because the drag MC announces that it's time for open mic. Who wants to come up and give us a carol? Patrick shouts, Hugo! And he begrudgingly gets up and sings, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. That's where our month's namesake came from.
In July.
Making the Yuletide gay in July. He's making serious heart eyes at Patrick during the song until he gets to the line that says, "In the end, we'll all be together if the fates allow," which causes Patrick to get up and leave. Too soon! Too soon! Hugo gets off the stage to find out that Patrick left in a huff. Well, if it wasn't in a huff, more like a poof because he wasn't that mad, goes after him and finds him on the sidewalk. He asked if the singing was that bad, and Patrick tells him that he thought he could do this, but he can't. He can't be around Hugo, knowing that they only have a short period of time. He wishes him a Merry Christmas and disappears into the night as Hugo calls after him. Patrick! Patrick, come back! Patrick! Maybe not that dramatic, but, you know, we do a little dramatic reenactments.
The next day, Patrick, Maddie, and Aiden are back at the train station setting up the small-town figurines that are finally finished. Maddie excitedly divulges to Hugo that she is staying around to go to a New Year's party with Aiden, and Hugo is surprised, but...
Just gloss over that. They're going to what? She's going to stay and go to that party with Aiden? Where is she going to sleep? That's what I want to know. She's staying at Mama Kate's. Mm-hmm. He's staying at Mama Kate's. Mm-hmm. They're going to be there for a little while after for the New Year's party. Are they both staying there? Are they going to be in separate rooms? Are they going to be in the same room? This is Lifetime after all. It's not Hallmark.
Yeah, I don't think people are still sharing the rooms in the Lifetime movie either. Sorry to disappoint you. But I would say that Mama Kate would encourage that happening because she wants a little love action between the both of them. So she'll do whatever it takes. She may even be like, "Look, this room is flooded, so I'm sorry, Maddie, but you're going to have to room with Aiden."
"Oh, I think Aiden's not taking a shower. Can you go in there and get the shampoo out of the tub for me?" "Yeah." "Oh, he was in the shower? I'm so sorry." "My wires are crossed."
She's sharp as a tack, she is. Hugo is surprised, but happy-ish? He responds, "As long as you come back in time to help me pack." "Of course," Maddie responds. "I'll always be there for you." Aiden eyes him. "I feel like you have reservations about the whole London thing." Hugo agrees. He's got a lot to think about, and with that, he goes upstairs to the paperwork on Carson's desk. A photo slips out, and there's an inscription on the back, and it says, "To my darling Ashby, on your favorite day of the year, always, your Edgar." Hugo flips over the pic, and it's a picture of Carson and Ashby. His heart is going pitter-patter. Could it be? It's a mystery! He pulls out a magnifying glass, a la Sherlock Holmes. And in the pic, mm-hmm. Carson and Ashby are hooking their pinkies with each other in the subtlest of handholds. Hugo realizes that
Carson and Ashby in their third Carson. They had a threesome. They were a throuple.
Carson and Ashby were, in fact.
You want it to be so. You want it to be so.
I do. Love us. And Ashby's favorite holiday is Christmas. And I'm glad that Tam realized the holiday part because I did not put that together at all. Later that night, Hugo is getting ready for the party, but in a tender moment, his mom has a gift to give him before they head out. It's his father's woodworking tools, and she wants him to continue the tradition and take it with him wherever he goes.
I don't know. If I had a small New York apartment, oh, no thanks, Mom. Especially because I'm moving to London. Can I just keep him here?
Is this imagine small box, with that? Though?
God, it's going to be like, it's so heavy. I already got so many things I got to pack. I could kill any touching moment. Just give me a few seconds.
Gentle listeners, it's just like a shoebox sized box of tools. It's not anything. It's not like a woodworking table.
Well, that weighs 45 pounds. That night, the Christmas celebration is finally in full swing at the train station. Aiden and Hugo reveal the Carol Street figurines that they made. Well, it was mostly Hugo with the side of Aiden, but Aiden helped. Mama Kate is thrilled by the surprise, and everybody disperses to enjoy the festivities. The party's in full swing when Hugo notices Aiden giving Maddie the eye. "Careful," he says, "that's my best friend." Aiden knows, and he assures him that Maddie's special. Hugo can't imagine how they're going to make it work. Long distance is hard. But Aiden tells him, you don't find something that special very often. Right, Hugo? Right?
Right?
Just then, somebody walks through the door. Is it Patrick? No, it's an old man. Mm-hmm. Maybe that could be a somebody special new? I don't know. Mama Kate gets on the stage to introduces herself and thanks everybody for coming and tells all the partygoers that this might be the last time they're at their beloved train station in Christmas. Their beloved...
Beloved?
This is the last time they're going to... Shut up. This is the last time they're going to be at their beloved train station for Christmas. Or is it?
Ooh.
She calls Hugo onto the stage to explain. People seem to like Hugo to get on stages, and he always acts like he doesn't want to go on there, but when he does, he performs fabulously. And this time is no exception. He talks about how he's been coming to the train station since before he can remember, and how proud Edgar Carroll would be with the diversity here, and the strides people are taking towards inclusivity. Just then, Patrick comes in, and Hugo sees him. His next words are still to the crowd, but he is gazing intently into Patrick's eyes. Not only do I feel proud to grow up in this neighborhood, but I generally feel excited for the future. Aww. And like Mr. Carroll, this is where my heart is. He gets off stage, hugs his mom, and beelines it towards Patrick. Home, huh? Patrick asks. Do you mean it? They go to a quieter corner, and he shares the Carroll secret and how Ashby was his partner. Can you imagine what they must have gone through back then? That realization, along with all the other Christmas miracles, make Hugo realize that anything special is worth fighting for, and they both want to make it work. Meanwhile, Mama Kate is hovering around behind them, passing paper around for everyone to fill out their Santa wish list. She hands both Hugo and Patrick a slip of paper. Patrick takes it but doesn't move to write anything down. Hugo asks him why not, and he looks at him, smiles, and says, I already got everything I wanted for Christmas.
Aww.
A short time later, the train whistle blows and everyone files out to put their letters on board the Christmas Express. Of course, just then, it starts snowing. And thank the lucky stars, it's not that icky CGI snow. It's not the icky CGI snow. It's actually like the physical snow that they blow in there. Probably bubbles. I don't care.
Yeah.
I prefer it
yeah,
much more
so
than the computer-generated ones. Patrick and Hugo walk onto the train platform and hold hands, a simple act that couldn't be done by Carol and Ashby all those years ago. And while people are loading bags onto the train in the swirling snow, they kiss, and it's a damn good one. Mama Kate gets her camera and snaps a photo, one of true love between two men that can finally be lived out in the open.
Aww.
The end.
Yay! Woo! All right.
Man, Corinne, what do you give the Christmas setup? How many dry kisses, girl? How many dry kisses?
I give this a solid 4 dry kisses. Not super diverse,
nope.
But very gay. Very, 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 very gay. Committed to gay.
Yes.
And it was lovely. My heart went pitter-patter throughout the entire thing. And I was riding the wave throughout it. I was into it. The hard eyes, all 9 yards. So 4 solid, dry, hot, gay kisses.
Mm-hmm.
What do you give this?
Same 4 non-CGI snowy dry kisses. I fell in love with Patrick and the relationship he had with Hugo, and then the fact that I found out that they were actually married just was like, oh no, that's it. I'm out. Because they had such good chemistry, and I hate to say it, and I will not name the people that we saw recently that were in a movie together that were married, and we're just like, I thought there was going to be way more heat.
Ooh.
And there's not.
Ooh,
it's a little cool.
Yeah.
And so to see the opposite end of the spectrum, mm-hmm. where you feel the heat without knowing that they're married and then finding out that they're married, was just such a mwah, chef's kiss.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness.
Mm-hmm.
I love Fran Drescher.
Yeah.
I forgot
too.
How shrill her voice was, but I still love her. The storyline was okay. I like the layers. I think I would have liked this movie a whole lot more if I wasn't outlining it and retelling it. So
yeah.
If I could just sit down and enjoy it, I would be like, oh, and then the Ashby and Carol story. Oh, I
yeah.
love that piece of it, especially at the end when the little photograph fell out of the book and he picked it up and it was the two of them having like the slightest little inkling of their relationship, like known to somebody years and years and years down the line because they couldn't say it while they were alive. Yeah. Also very, very nice little layer.
And I also really liked the Aiden Maddie subplot as well. Yeah. Like, that was super sweet.
I know. Same. I was like, oh, Aiden and Maddie. Oh, Ashby and Carol. Oh, Hugo and Petra. Okay, there's a little too many stories going on here, people. I have to outline this shit. Can we just simmer down now with all the love going on? Thanks. But other than that, four dry kisses.
So, what do we have coming up next week?
Next time, we are doing a Hallmark movie. Ooh. And it's called Every Time a Bell Rings.
Question, is it gay?
Yes, yes, it is.
Because we're...
It is Jule, and we are gay in Jule. We're making Yuletide gay in Jule all day, all Tuesday. And what things rhyme with gay? If I may, just say that it's gay in Jule.
This movie is great because Allie Liebert, she's starred in a bunch of Hallmark movies, and she is gay, and she plays a gay character in Every Time a Bell Rings, so she has finally gotten to play a gay character, whereas the previous time she played these leads that were straight, which is totally fine, but it's nice to be able to like, get a represent as well, you know? So, So super excited about that.
Yep.
And if you have any thoughts about the Christmas setup, Every Time a Bell Rings, making the Yuletide gay in Jule, you can email us at onedrykiss@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us via the social meds at on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook, all at One Dry Kiss.
And as always, if you like what we do and you can find the time, we would love to see your ratings and reviews anywhere you listen to this podcast. We appreciate you guys hanging in there during our break, and we're glad to be back. I know this is already the second episode, not the first, but we're glad you're here. Thanks for sticking around. And as always, we bid you adieu with
one dry kiss.
Mwah. See you next time.
See you next time.
Trixie, Trixie.
It wasn't me. It was Cassandra. Blame it in app.